Chapter 24. The Piece of Sugar. All the sheepdog wanted was to undo all the evil on his planet. He now knew that the deities of Gaja had existed, but not how exactly they had come to Alpha Vol. The fact that they saw no way out and had to flee could be explained from two points of view. On the one hand, they noticed the nature of man, which would inevitably lead to the destruction of Gaja one day. On the other hand, the gods could not stay in Tamari. Not under a royal family, whose relatives they had kidnapped and murdered, because the despots were of the opinion to be the true gods. Both reasons could be summarized with the greed of man. Among all the sins you speak of in your religions, the worst is that of greed. You multiply like rabbits, always wanting more space, wealth, power. No wonder you had to take a beating from my people, Chenra whispered to himself. The beggar had told him about two wise old men who lived in seclusion in the desert. The hermit existence of these eccentrics presumably led to inner contemplation, balance and a special view of the world. If someone knew something more exact about the request of the anthropomorphic gods, then these men. Perhaps they could also tell him how to change the timeline and travel back to the future, under the then newly created conditions. Approaching the riverbed, the dog discovered two cloth dwellings at some distance from each other and camels that were calmly letting the red of the sun shine on them. Not knowing if he would be welcomed here, the Alsatian walked slowly towards one of the tents, raising his arms. He looked around and called out, "Hello? Is there anyone here? My name is Chenra and I come to you in peace." No answer sounded. The people's quarters were at first surrounded by silence, when suddenly the hiss of an approaching arrow sounded, narrowly missing the dog's head and then lodging in the trunk of a small tree. The male startled, "Whoa, hey, are you guys always this hostile to visitors?" When he turned around, a man on a camel approached him and immediately started shouting. He spoke words that sounded aggressive and indignant, appearing to the sovereign like a serious threat, although he had difficulty understanding what was being said from a distance. The intruder raised his arms higher in order not to risk being pierced by an arrow. Again and again, he tried to correctly pronounce the Tamrian greeting Alam wa Salam, but the human did not get irritated, but quickly came towards him, further threatening with his bow. A few meters away from him, however, the Arab switched to dialogue, jumped off his mount and said angrily, "You obviously don't know our language. Watch your tongue, God being." He spoke a very strong dialect, which Chenra interpreted to mean that he had little or nothing to do with people who did not speak ancient Egyptian. He must have been one of the two hermits mentioned that the male had been looking for. "I mean you no harm, really. I'm looking for answers and asking for your help," the supposed god now affirmed, carefully taking his dagger from its sheath and raising it high enough to be seen. The man eyed him and then spoke, "I read honesty in you, dog. What do you want from us?" "I just want to talk to you, that's all. Hear me out first and then decide what to do with me. I am otherwise unarmed, on that I give you my word. My name is Chenra Gejays." "Bah." The human rebuffed, but lowered his bow and spat contemptuously into the sand. "Your words cannot be trusted, honest as they may sound. Too often you gods have failed us. The only reason I believe you of all people and do not kill you outright is because I can see that you carry the armor and dagger of Tutankhaten. The fact that the armor does not claim your life tells me that you must be of good disposition. I know its power and that few can wear it without being instantly turned to ash. It cannot be deceived." Now the Tamrian stood directly in front of him and eyed him suspiciously again. "I want you to know that I have no evil intentions. I do not belong to any of the contending parties, that is, neither to Cleopatra nor to Ptolemy. I am subordinate to none." "Of course you're not. You've never met either of them," the human confirmed, staring deeply into my protagonist's eyes. It took a few silent seconds before he continued, "You may not be from here, you may not be from Tamari, but there's more, you're not from now either, are you?" "W what?" The male dog was startled. Then a shock ran through him and his heart began to race. What had the human just said? Did he know that Chenra was from Earth, but not from the current time? Was his statement a coincidence, a metaphor? Had it been spoken at all or had he simply imagined it? "There is something in your eyes that is of this world, but which should not yet exist. The hope that comes when it has become dark around us. You carry it within you, Chenra Gejays, dog of the future." The latter could not believe his ears. Where? The man, however, walked past him and made a waving hand gesture towards the tent. Gajes followed, and with him all his uncertainty about what the man knew, could know, and should not know at all. "I think," the Alsatian then spoke, "that you are confusing me with someone else. Do you really think that one can travel around in time? I am a simple dog, not one with such abilities." The slender nomad, dressed in a turban, sat down and placed a pipe next to his buttocks on a knotted blanket. "No need to lie, dog. Whatever you think you want to tell me," he said calmly and firmly, "I see truths that are very far from even you. The others may consider your kind to be gods. But I know that you, too, are only a fellow inhabitant of this world. You age, you die. So why should we pay homage to you? If you are a god, how can it be that you do not find the path you intend to follow yourself? Why do you seek us out who are outcasts? Shouldn't a god be all-powerful, understanding, knowing and overlooking everything?" "Listen," the Kisar interjected. "I don't know how you think about me, what you see in me, but I'm not all-powerful. I want to ask for your help and know what I need to do to reach the pyramids of Giza quickly. I don't know when the eclipse ceremony will start, but..." The Arab interrupted harshly, "You mean the union between Re and Apep? Those, my friend, are gods. Not time-traveling beings that you might think of as such. The time from which it has beaten you forth has no luster. Your lives are no longer worth anything to each other. I had visions of distant worlds, and in one of them I saw some like you. That's why I'm not surprised to meet you here. However you came here, our meeting can only be fate. If you will, I have even been waiting for the right one among you to teach him the lesson of true humanity. So you believe in truth in visions, do you? And also in knowing what the lives of others are worth to me? Do you really think a few dreams are enough to tell me something about the meaning of life? You don't know me and yet you allow yourself to judge." The human nodded as his counterpart looked stern and crossed his arms. "The only true purpose in your life should be to give happiness to others in theirs. It seems," remarked the Alsatian, "that you really believe what you're saying, old man." "But yes," he then confirmed. The sheepdog looked unimpressed and asked, "Is this the knowledge you wanted me to know? Did I walk all the way here for that?" "It is one of many that I will give you. Whenever we gain a new knowledge, we should give it from us, because in the maturity of time, a new one finds its way back to us. My time is also finite. Therefore, I should give my experience to others who can use it. And that someone, as fate wills for both of us, is you." "Oh dear," Chenra sighed. "That should probably take quite a while. But good. Whatever you want to teach me, if it gets me closer to my goal, or is a prerequisite for the help I need, I think I'll listen to you. I'll take all the time it takes." The ancient Egyptian made an inviting, wordless hand gesture, after which the dog also sat down cross-legged on a blanket that had been laid out. "I suppose you are very wise. Surely you have seen and done a lot in your life, haven't you?" asked the soldier. "Wise is not he who thinks he can already do everything, but he who has already done everything. And only the one who tries new things reaches true greatness on the journey to his teaching. Not stupid is he who fails, but he who gives up. To deny yourself certainty, only for supposed peace, must not be an option. You must acquire certainty, embrace knowledge, if you are to achieve your goals, dog." What kind of a strange old codger was he, the sheepdog wondered. He hoped he could help him reverse the events on Alpha Vol. Joliad and Amarok were to live again and he was to return to his time. The man seemed to know something about time travel. What could he, Chenra, do with clever, wise sayings that would not help? "So if you know that I am from the future, I will also tell you that I have traveled to this origin of my world to undo evil things and wrong decisions in it. Can you help me with that or not?" "I don't really have time for phrases and such things," he ruled, but his counterpart only smiled relaxedly. "You're not a god, you're looking for their help, aren't you?" "Sure I do. If that's what you want to call it. I know it must be possible to change the future and then travel back to it. After all, I came here, too. I assumed that you would show me. The pyramids and this ceremony have something to do with it. But I don't know how to reach the pyramids in time, for one thing, and how all this is supposed to work, for another." "So you think everyone around you is telling you the truth? You don't think they've been messing with me?" Before he could finish the sentence, the old man spoke, True greatness is not in acting on the principles of others, but in devising some of your own. Excuse me? Just because others have told you it's possible to change the timeline doesn't necessarily make it true. Are you telling me that you can't help me? Then I can leave right away, said the Kisar crossly and was about to get up again when the human shook his head. You can design truth yourself, he spoke, whereupon the dog decided to remain seated. What do you mean? How? Now he became curious and looked interested. Let me tell you about the bumblebee. I will explain to you how to design truth and lie by yourself. Not many know how to do it. In your era, probably no one. That's sad. But that's why I want to teach you, as I said before, the old man said. If you have to. Yeah, go for it. Chenra tried not to immediately dismiss what was said as gossip, even if it was difficult for him to follow everything, to sort it out and to apply it to his situation. He was counting on at least taking away an aha effect at the end of this meeting and perhaps getting the answer that would clarify everything. It was possible that everything this person said was connected. It could also be that he simply needed someone to talk to. But, hadn't the beggar reported about two outcasts? Where was the other one? When the dog wanted to ask his counterpart this question, opened his catch, the Egyptian started telling him a little story. One day I was talking to a bumblebee who, industrious as ever, was going about her tasks, whatever they might be. I wondered about her and asked, say, how can you rise in the air when you are so fat and heavy? What do you mean? She asked me, clearly irritated by my question. Well, I then spoke, you have such small wings. In spite of all certainties, you still swing from blossom to blossom, although it should not be possible at all. The little creature thought about this and then stuttered, so you're saying. I can't actually fly? Actually, you can't. And if you had thought about it earlier, you never would have tried. And suddenly the bumblebee became sad and fell to the ground. Never again did she flap her wings. Gajay's mused. I think I understand what you're trying to tell me, just because others say something can or can't be done doesn't make it so. I'm supposed to use my judgment, what I already know, and make up my own mind. If I listen to others, I can be lied to and draw wrong conclusions, right? The human didn't address the question and said musingly, there are no bumblebees left in Tamari. I think she told her friends about our conversation, so they too have stopped flying forever. You know what I think? I think you're kidding me. Are you willing to believe that things like this can actually happen? Things you don't understand, can't imagine, or think are impossible? The dog crossed his arms again and raised an eyebrow. Well, he spoke, I would like to tell you some wisdom, too, I cannot simply ignore the given laws of nature. As a sovereign being, however, I am ultimately free to decide which of them I believe in. The old man smiled, sovereign being. The existence of a higher power does not presuppose that we believe in it. But faith presupposes that a higher power exists. You know yourself that the gods are real. Just as the people of this land have always believed in them, worshipped them and paid homage to them. They did not have to stand before us for us to know that they were among us. Only then, when they showed themselves to the people, did we understand that things exist that at first seem strange, impossible, but then are quite clear to us. I always thought I didn't need to ask for anything. After all, I never depended on anything. You said I could design truth myself. How then? You have already traveled here over 2,000 years into the past. You are a sovereign being, as you say. Now you know that your possibilities depend on what you believe to be the truth. The Anthro confirmed, that's right, but I can't tell you how I did it with time travel. A friend died and I put his sword in the hand of a statue. Then I placed a sacred stone on it. I couldn't know what would happen after that, just had a feeling. It didn't say anywhere by chance that you would stumble into the past with it. That the stone should enable time travel was, according to legends, clear. That it would mean a journey into the past, I did not suspect. I want to go back to my time, but to a point where my friends are still alive. I understand. Everything you do here can have an impact on the future back home. I'm sure you already know that. However, what exactly you need to do to affect your time so greatly, but still leave it intact, I can't tell you for sure. But, then what am I doing here? I realize that what I do will have repercussions. Our conversation alone might be enough. How, then, can I check whether I have succeeded, or will succeed in the future? What if I do too much, take a wrong turn somewhere, and destroy everything? These answers require a broader understanding of time, genre. It is more than the movements of the sun's disk, the old man reminded, rummaging around in a cloth bag. The Gaijin brought out a wooden goblet into which he poured water from his drinking tube. I'm not thirsty, thank you, Geijie said, but the man wordlessly set the jar down in front of him before rummaging again and then presenting a small, white lump between his thumb and forefinger. What is it? Asked the Alsatian. That's me, a simple piece of sugar. What? You never noticed me among all the others. Yet I was always there, never gone. Then the person pointed to the cup and continued speaking, this is a cup full of water. The water of ordinariness. It is still, colorless and without taste. The dog interrupted, you're joking now, right? I see that this is water. And if you throw me into this water, you will see, it will take quite a while, I will disintegrate into many thousands of pieces. The dog looked confused as his counterpart dropped the sugar lump into the water. So what now? He asked, overwhelmed. Is this some game where I'm supposed to guess what's going to happen? I can tell you that. Shh, the old man interrupted. Be patient. To understand time, you must know patience and silence. The male dog stared skeptically at the goblet. For a few moments nothing happened, until after a while the lump began to be dissolved by the water and to disintegrate. Suddenly, the human continued speaking, snapping the trance-stricken Chenra out of his thoughts. Every grain I was made of was a memory, a wish, a dream, and a character of mine. But all that is now slowly but steadily being dissolved. And now I'm supposed to watch the sugar dissolve in what feels like 20 years? Really? This could not be true. What kind of wisdom was this that Chenra was about to gain? What kind of game was this guy playing? What was this supposed to bring? Shut up and be patient. The man now muttered crossly and continued to contemplate the water absorbedly. The sugar was now completely melted, but not even halfway dissolved. Chenra, too, watched the sluggish action and did what the Gaijin wanted. He watched the chunk disintegrate, getting smaller and smaller. This took an eternity, but at some point the dog no longer felt the passing of time. They waited until the last grain was completely gone. If you drink the water then, the old man murmured, directing Chenra to take a drink, you will taste, I am always here, never been away. The Alsatian took a small sip and noticed that the liquid now tasted sweet. The sugar, which was no longer visible, had apparently not really disappeared, but had only changed its form. It had become part of the water. So every trait was swallowed up by the water of ordinariness and made invisible. The dog put down the jar. Although he did not know what this was supposed to teach him, he could not deny that he just felt deeply relaxed. Everything around him was secondary and his head was blank. If you leave the water then, one day it will be gone, he chimed in. What, we're supposed to wait for the water to evaporate now too? The dog wondered. Really? We're supposed to wait now until... Hush! The human commanded again, now appearing enraged. Not wanting to make him angry, the Kisar kept silent and continued to contemplate. The Tamrian seemed to be serious, they would now sit there and wait until the water had completely evaporated. This was so pointless, superfluous and stupid that the male shook his head inwardly and wondered from time to time why he was actually letting this happen to him. He had no time for all that. It was very warm in the small tent and there was no breeze. The liquid would take an incredibly long time to disappear. The hours passed. Initially, the dog felt a pain in the back. It was not possible for him to change his sitting posture. Later, the feeling in his legs left him, they tingled and became numb. He was tired, blinked, but could not close his eyes permanently. Wherever this curiosity came from, he now wanted to follow how the water level sank and sank. The senses of the Alsatian seemed to play tricks on him, for what he had not been able to do before now worked. He could literally hear the blowing of grains of sand outside the tent, carried away by the wind with a soft rustling. His sense of smell intensified until he was able to smell the sweet scent of water. He tasted the warm air and felt a slight tingling sensation all over. He also felt like his eyes were projecting a sharper, more detailed and brighter image into his mind. Thus it became possible for him to see that the chalice, at which he had been staring uninterruptedly for almost 2 days now, bore Latin, Arabic and Greek characters. It was made of wood, very detailed and decorated with gold. Although I can't read the text, I could picture the representation of the vessel. Suddenly I was overcome by a feeling of fascination and it became clear to me that this was no simple cup. Chenro was looking at a work of art that was so special that no amount of money in the world could have bought it. One that would play a supporting role for people many years later. One would fill the chalice first with wine, later with blood. It would become something that many centuries later would cause the Gajans to seek it, to wage wars, and to slay each other. I was stunned and joyful at the same time, because my protagonist had, without realizing it, brought one of the most important treasures of human history to his lips and drunk from it. This was the Holy Grail. The one from which Jesus was to drink in a few years for the Last Supper and with which Judas would catch the blood of the Savior for his crucifixion. I was aware that I would not live much longer and that no one would believe what I was now aware of anyway. It felt strange to know something so significant, but never to be able to tell anyone about it. Who would have believed me that it was my protagonist who held this treasure in his hands, even before anyone had written about it and the Grail had gained importance? All those who surrounded me thought that the Vulpes Lupus Canis was a fiction, a fairy tale, nothing more. I, however, believed in every single word that my son, through his journey, had created in this book and made real. For 3 days and nights the two had been sitting there like that, not moving an inch and continuing to watch the wooden vessel. At the moment when the last drop of water had evaporated, the old man suddenly exclaimed out, "And you will see that something is left behind." The sheepdog jerked in fright, but felt so light and detached that he felt as if he were floating when the old man held the Grail in front of him, presenting it. Now sugar could be seen in it again, this time in the form of small, shiny crystals. "That's me too, the piece of sugar. Only stronger and more unbreakable than ever. And then you'll hear me whisper again, because I've always been there and never been gone. By the gods. I think I just understood, old man. My senses, they are so much better. I see." The dog rejoiced, feeling an inner calm and contentment flow through him. "I know that, Chenra. That's exactly why we've been sitting here. Development needs rest and time. It is nice that you can see now," the human spoke, which seemed to the male remarkably equal to the statement of the goddess Aria to Ephraim. "How much time has passed since I've been here? Don't you think it doesn't matter at all? Those who are our gods can make eternities pass in just one sentence. It doesn't matter how long maturation and healing take. What matters in the end is that they happened and what effect they have on you. After all, you experienced them while you were still alive, not after you passed away." The dog could now not only see, hear, feel, smell and taste better. His inner self could now follow other thought patterns that would not have occurred to him before. "So if I want to change time itself, I have to change what the architect will write in about 2,000 years. After all, this too is probably only his fiction," he mused. He sighed and said to his counterpart that it basically sounded completely ridiculous. What if all this didn't exist? Maybe he was trying to change things that didn't exist, like the timeline he was in. The Tamrian, however, taught him only, the magic of this world, and of any other, is that everything has the unshakable will to be. Even if there is no wind blowing to stir the leaves of a tree or the sand, it still moves. If the paving stones of the Romans want to deprive the plants under them of any light to live, nevertheless one day they emerge. If it is not a sunny day, a bird still sings joyfully, perpetually. And if, one day, what is now is no more, then at the same time there is still a being, which is then different. Different from the being which we just believe to comprehend. And that will mean? The male wanted to know. It means that it doesn't matter what seems to be true at the moment. There is always a being, whether the circumstances may allow it or not. If others do not believe in your world, then you do it at least, Chenra. I have now been able to look into your mind for several hours. Now I know that you have succumbed to a power that you consider an architect. I understand what you want to do and what it means to you. While many things are possible, none of what you intend to do will be easy. "Yes," escaped loudly from the person addressed. He had understood. "That's it. My timeline, my world, it is a fork in the road of yours. It is so simple." The old man grinned. "Well, you see. You too have understood. I'm glad, Chenra. I knew you were no fool. You were the right one for these teachings. The puzzle that had been created in his mind and had become completely jumbled was now coming together in his mind's eye. There is a moment when the gods send life to Alpha Vol. That is the fork. Oh, and when is that moment? The old man inquired scrutinizingly. The reality of the architect and that of Alpha Vol can never meet, but mine originates here, in Tamari, in his reality. Again and again, he wrote of two god beings who resembled the sun and the moon, who were their representatives. Aria, the she-wolf, once said that she met her husband ages ago and missed him very much. She meant the moment when she kissed him for the last time, 2,000 years ago. That's right. These are the images I saw in your mind. And what makes this moment, this kiss, Chenra? The man looked smug, when the male dog had a flash of inspiration and exclaimed, the next solar eclipse. It's not just any, sometime, but the next one where travel will work. It's the last one there will be. The time calculations on Gaja and Alpha Vol are therefore almost identical. Slowly, the sheepdog stood up and felt that he was hunching over. He stretched and his bones cracked loudly, which he punctuated with a pained expression. I'm getting old, ouch. He groaned, while the human, unimpressed, lit his pipe. Your armor is made of the material of the heavenly rock, as is the dagger of the god king. They are both indestructible and, in the right hands, very powerful. Who knows, you may need them again soon. That you have these items with you speaks to your destiny, he spoke and puffed. The Kisar looked at his upper body armor and confirmed, that's true, old man. An excellent piece. However, I would have liked them much sooner. These things will help me undo everything. I just want my friends and my time back. I want to make the sugar that the water has devoured into much stronger crystals by evaporating the water. This metaphor, my friend, means much more. It means that something tender, thin-skinned is all too quickly eaten up by circumstances. But if it survives that, and enough time has passed, it will be healed, emerge stronger than ever. The native had now also stood up and they walked together in front of the tent. Thoughtfully, the Gajan drew again on the pipe and opened his interlocutor that the protector could soon be useful, because the pyramids are never unguarded. I assume they won't have rolled out a red carpet for me when I arrive, the Alsatian flattened, though the human apparently couldn't do anything with that. I mean, they're certainly not going to welcome me with open arms and watch me disrupt the ceremony. How do you think, the era began, your ancestors came into your world? That they did so at the soon-to-be solar eclipse, you found out. But how did they manage to get there? Phew, I don't know, the dog confessed, but they sure didn't take the bus, hey hey. What is a bus? Oh, forget it, old man. The human shrugged his shoulders and took another hearty pull. They will be sent there en masse in a few days. Each of the gods splits into many, small parts. That sounds like they're going to explode, if you ask me. Splits? What does that mean? The male asked, turning to look at him expectantly. Do you think the pharaohs had these huge things built solely as their own resting places? No, the pyramids definitely play a role in all of this. I was able to read that in the Temple of Yenebian. What exactly they do, however, was unfortunately not written there, Chenra spoke thoughtfully. Sighing, the old man sat down cross-legged in front of the entrance to the tent, which his interlocutor did likewise. I don't even want to know what other errors your time, the future, has succumbed to, my friend. Obviously, much valuable knowledge has been lost. To prevent this, my people write it down. Why do you think it is missing from your culture then? He asked, shaking his head. The male dog explained, in my world, the land of Tamari does not exist. We do not know hieroglyphics. In your world, much time will have to pass before people will dig up the first stone tablets. The ravages of time have gnawed at many texts. Some are still buried in the sand even then. But a large part they cannot read at all or interpret wrongly. Regrettable. Really? As you may have noticed, the Tamrians greatly revere your species. In the pyramids lie the pharaohs who should be in charge of transferring the descendants of the gods to your planet. But not only they are there. Parts of the gods are also found here. The dog could not quite follow the paraphrases. That the pharaohs are buried in them I do know, but what do you mean by pieces? They're not going to cut themselves into pieces, are they? No, the explainer shook his head, of course they don't. But they are said to always leave something of themselves, after each ceremony. They try that again, after many orbits of the disk Rhys, whenever there is a new eclipse. But what they leave there, even I don't know. I've never been there. I see. But how can you know what they're doing there when you've never been there? I know because I saw a ceremony in my visions, a long time ago. But the images were very indistinct, blurred, and so I couldn't tell if the gods were carrying anything. The dog could not believe his ears. The gods left something there? Something to be sent on the journey? Didn't they go themselves, then? Is that true, old man? He received only the, almost angry-sounding, counter-question, do you think, after everything, that I would lie to you? And no, of course not. I didn't know. Of course you didn't know. I don't think any of you from the future know anything anymore, the human now hissed. Why do you think yours are fighting each other? Because they don't know they're all the same. Gods in the eyes of the ancient human races. Yanapu, Bast, Horus and others. They all try to ensure the survival of their species, transfer something to another place, knowing what will happen to this world in the distant future. You can tell me many things from the future. Some of it I certainly don't understand, because it is very far away. But that which is hate, I can understand very well, my friend. I'm sorry that we've become like this. We're like children who fight and don't really know the reason anymore. The sovereign now lowered his head and sighed loudly. This person was right, yet I don't know what to do at this ceremony to change my timeline. I am not a god, just a sheepdog from the future. What can I do once powerful beings like Yanapu? He interrupted, raised his head again and widened his eyes. Yes, of course I can. I'll look at what they're shipping and take it away from them or destroy it. I've got to get to the pyramids, old man, and as fast as I can. I just have to stop the shipment, no matter how that will go. Maybe I can choose what will go on the trip and thus change enough to prevent war and suffering in my world in the first place. I'm sure I can find a way. Now the Egyptian smiled slightly again and put the pipe aside. Good, he spoke, that you are so docile. Well, for a dog. I have the feeling that our four-legged friends here are clearly dumber than the god beings. He laughed loudly, stood up again and waved for Chenra to follow him to his friend's tent. They walked a few steps and arrived at a small dwelling, not very different from the previous one. Handotep, you have a visitor. The human called out as they stood in front of the entrance. I haven't even asked you your name yet. That was very rude of me, the Alsatian had to confess. My name is Farhad, the craftsman. I am someone who likes to build things, and not just pass on knowledge. I take care of the expansion of houses. That is in my clan, the attendant spoke tersely and bowed. My ancestors also served in the construction of the last pyramid. It's a pleasure, Farhad. You are very wise. Thank you for wanting to help me, the dog spoke and bowed as well, when the tent was opened and a, also quite old, almost toothless human grinned through the hatch. Ah, Farhad, you son of a bitch. The owner of the dwelling chuckled. Come in and bring your visitor quietly. I'd love to, spoke the dog. The three sat down cross-legged in the tent and Handotep wasted no time, asking Chenra, I think you're the one looking for help. Right? You're right. But where? I will tell you where your origin is. It's not hard to find, you know. It's a little thing that you could have figured out for yourself. But good. A friend of my friend is also my friend. Now I am really curious if everything is so simple, remarked the Kisar, while Farhad smiled and it seemed as if he already knew what was coming now. The self-absorbed, arrogant King Ptolemy I, decreed long before his descendant, today's pharaoh, that his face should be allowed to watch over the pyramids instead of that of Anpo. He was the first pharaoh who broke the agreement with the animal gods, according to which he should be raised to a god and should have a pyramid built for it. At first resistance was formed against this project, because one regarded the defacement of the Anpo representation as desecration of ancient art, one feared even divine anger. But the subjects chiseled obediently at the face of the jackal and formed the image of their king. In the process, the filigree nose of the almost finished head finally broke off, and the Skeez Banch, as we know it today, now lay in the desert sand as a symbol of Ptolemy's shame and arrogance, unfinished, shapeless, and without a nose. The Alsatian interrupted, "You mean the Sphinx, don't you? I already know this story. A beggar told it to me." Handotep looked irritated, but then said, waving it away, "Whatever it is called for you. The name does not simply mean image of life, but a living image of Anpo. The scribes, however, have always been forbidden to report on it. The descendant of Ptolemy I, Ptolemy XIII, goes one step further and tries to wipe out the remaining deities in order to be the only godlike being on earth. This is one of the reasons for the dispute he and his sister Cleopatra are currently fighting. While each party hires Roman soldiers and Cleopatra shares a bed with Gaius Julius Caesar, we Tamrians, like the gods, suffer from the instability of the empire." Astonished, the shepherd nodded and admitted that these details had remained hidden from him until now. "How could you possibly know, Chenra? It must not be written about. I don't think there will be anything about it in your books in the future," the narrator said, after which a moment of silence fell on all the voices. Then he put his hand on the shoulder of the male, closed his eyes and spoke further, "Your origin is here on Gaja. But not only your body originates from materials of our time, but also your spirit. The people who revere those like you are the ones who want to protect your kind. Representing their sanity, you now sit before us as a soldier of the future, defending your race once again." I, too, nodded now as I continued to read the book. I understood, the hieroglyphs in the temple had told the Kisar that the deities died out, but concealed that mainly the pharaoh was responsible, because he had them hunted down and murdered. Some of them died trying to leave Gaja, but not all of them. Sadly, I realized a lesson that I had taught myself, in writing my own work, history, after all, even in those ancient times, was always written by victors. They were the ones who were still able to write it down. Chenra Gejaz had defended his people from the humans on Alpha Vol, and some of the humans had defended the gods on Gaja many years before. There was an important parallel: the thing worth protecting in both timelines was Chenra, and with him my values. Suddenly, the man interrupted the touch and opened his eyes again, "Be that as it may. I will help you to get to the place where the next ceremony will take place. In you I see the desire and also the ability to change the world." "Thank you very much, Handotep," the male spoke respectfully, but the one addressed only shook his head. "I'll just point you in the right direction though, you'll have to walk on your own." Chenra sighed, "I have a feeling you probably won't lend me a camel. It could be a long way. Just explaining the way to me, with all due respect and gratitude, may not be enough. What if I don't make it and I'm too late?" Handotep spoke unperturbed, "Some time after you have started walking there, you will arrive at a village where you will rest for a while." "Wait a minute," the dog interrupted briskly, "I don't plan to rest anywhere. Resting, I certainly won't. As I said, I don't have time for that." But Farhad reprimanded him, "Listen to what my brother says. Did you not learn patience from me and also that it will bring you knowledge?" Embarrassed, Gejaz agreed, "Yes, you're right, Farhad. I'm sorry. Well, if you want me to rest there, for whatever reason, then of course I will." Handotep continued, "Accept the offer of tranquility when it comes to you. It is the key. Without it, you have gone through your life letting time pass like sand, without any sense or reason." "Yes, I will. I see what you mean. After a new expansion of your mind, which you will surely experience, and it shall not be the last, follow Re's sun disk for 3 of its orbits. Go always towards it and have enough fear not to turn away. On the 3rd, cold night, follow the moon until the sun disk reappears and begins to show its face. Then you follow it again. You will come to a large rock shaped like a snake. Go within yourself occasionally and let the gods guide you." The male sighed, "Another riddle?" Then Handotep looked at his friend Farhad and asked in confusion, "What's wrong with him? I think my description was clear. Don't you think?" "He is not from here, brother. The dog god does not know our customs and the turns of our language. He will understand on his own whenever it is necessary." Handotep waved his hand dismissively, which Farhad understood and asked the Alsatian to leave now, "You have learned the lesson from me, the way from my brother. Now go away and find your destination yourself. Here in the drinking tube is enough water. Take it with you. Remember what you have learned and use it if necessary." Once again, the dog sighed, but immediately did as he was told. He continued his journey, although he did not really feel enlightened. What should occasionally go into yourself mean? When would be the right time, or where the right place? Chenra turned to the sun, saying very well. I thank you both for everything and ran off, not convinced that the instructions given to him would be enough. Could it be true that he would realize all by himself how his path had to go? Why didn't someone just give him a mount so that this would make his journey easier and speed it up? Did everything always have to be so complicated and confusing? Sometimes, he spoke to himself as he walked, I wish I had mud in my upper room. Then I wouldn't have to worry about anything, wouldn't have to fret. A lot of things would be easier. Chenro let the story about the lump of sugar circle in his head. If this lump meant an individual, the water meant society, it might be that this dissolved the individual beyond recognition. But was it not also the case that the taste of the sugar remained in the water? The catchword that came to his mind was, inspiration. Certainly, the visible shell of a person was lost after the end of his life. I was not religious, but I was not close to the idea of rebirth and destiny. After passing away, I hoped, I would leave something behind. Just as sugar made water sweet, you could taste it even though it was apparently gone. My story would remain on Gaja. The Vulpes Lupus Canis would perhaps inspire a few people. If a human life pursued the sense of aspirating, that is, soaking up experiences, knowledge and values, then inspiration was exactly opposite to aspiration. Wanting to preserve that thought for the moment, I folded the book closed and decided to go to the hospital cafeteria. Although I staggered a bit when I got out of bed, I didn't let that stop me from moving around as independently as I possibly could. It was remarkable. My dog was running through the endless desert, having a long journey ahead of him, whereby even a few meters were too much for me. He was looking for help, asking for advice, while one should just not touch me, reach under my arms or help me. Chenra and I were very different in nature, not only visually. But which of us took the supposedly better, more intelligent path in life, I was not able to say. When I arrived in the cafeteria with my wheelchair, I pulled out a vending machine coffee. It had to be black and without any other additives. I sat down at a small, round table and watched the people around me. They were talking to each other, showing each other the screens of their smartphones and giggling. They were all so delightfully compatible with each other. But what about me? I was sitting alone at a table, as I so often do here, deep in thought, studying the people around me, as I always have in my life. I was less compatible, approachable, sociable. I never asked anyone for love, recognition, friendship. Because I didn't feel lonely, I had my world after all, where Chenra lived. Wasn't that enough? Absorbed, I looked at the foam in my coffee cup and pondered, taking a sugar cube from a small bowl provided, placing it carefully on the layer of cream and waiting. For a few seconds, the surface carried the cube until it suddenly tilted and shortly thereafter merged with the liquid. It might seem as if he had disappeared and was lost, but I knew, character traits and values for which he symbolically stood, according to my understanding, could never be lost. They did, however, permanently change what was happening around them. What was it that had inspired me? What had shaped my character and made me who I was today? Education? Experience? No, it was fate.